The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody, a special edition of Everything You Need to Know. Kip Kiefer is with you, and right now, Tony Curry is still with us, although he usually steps out.
Hey, I am. Let me step out. I'm sitting there eating my banana, and I see what I'm doing? I got my headphones on, and I'm listening to your show, so let me get off of here, because I'm not part of the show.
I didn't want to get rolling and you say, I'm still on here.
Well, no, I'm kind of glad I did because I wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
It's your birthday today. Anyone that listened to my show on the plethora of radio stations I've done since I was 12 years old knows how important birthdays are to me. You're only going to have about 80 or 90 of them.
Yeah.
And they should be special. And it drives me crazy because a lot of people are like, talking about my birthday.
And then
2 days later, today's Monday. And then on Wednesday, someone, not you specifically, but someone will have a birthday on Monday. And then they come on Wednesday and I go, how's your week going? Oh, it's great. And then, my daughter took me out for dinner on Monday for my birthday. And I'm like, dude, why didn't you tell me? Guys aren't good at keeping track of birthdays. So you were nice enough to actually say, hey, today's my birthday. And I knew it was your birthday already because I had it on my phone. I was ready to go as my radio and television partner in many ways. So happy birthday to you. Now you can continue your show, my friend.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. And you're always invited to sit in on any of my programs here on your network since you make it possible. But we're going to talk about things today other than Kip Kiefer's birthday, which I guess was a historic occasion. But there are massive historic occasions happening right now in the Middle East. If you're just getting in circulation today and you haven't caught up with the news, all of the hostages seized 2 years and 6 days ago on October 7th, 2023 have now been released by Hamas. The 20 surviving hostages that were not let go for whatever reason back a couple of years ago, or back about a year ago, I guess it was, when negotiations had led to the release of a whole bunch of them. I think as many as 80 or up to 100, but the remaining 20 surviving hostages were released this morning around 2 and 3 a.m. local time here, and it has touched off a massive celebration in Israel. It was a national obsession, of course, with so many of their citizens illegally seized. And just think about that. Your life is going along on the path that you have tried to set for yourself. A lot of people that were caught up in this had gone to a music festival on a Saturday night on October 7th, 2023, only to be attacked and many of them slaughtered, unbelievably just murdered in cold blood, some of them in a torturous situation. A lot of young women raped and abused. And hundreds of people that night in regular towns, regular people, not soldiers, not military people, people just leading their life, walking their dog or at home in their house, invaded by this attack force of the Hamas terrorists who were in charge, of course, of the government in Gaza for a number of years since the 1967 war between Israel and that region of Palestinians. Anyway, long and short of the story is so many of those people seized, and just imagine how your life can just be completely disrupted or even ended that night. So many people, over 1,200 people, just brutally murdered as the Hamas horror and terrorist organization struck. But as unthinkable as just being murdered, just being seized and dragged underground, transported there as really chips to broker the hostilities and the complaints that these people had against Israel. Imagine being held in captivity for that long. And it's just inconceivable how much suffering these people did, how many empty hours of just sitting in these darkened underground, you know, secured locations and being fed next to nothing, having no privileges, couldn't even go outside. I mean, it's just inconceivable to think about. So for these people that were tough enough for 2 years and 6 days to survive this, to be liberated and get to come home, there are still 28 hostages unaccounted for in terms of where they are, and they're the demands to have them back, but they are all deceased now, passing away in captivity from various ailments or maybe even murdered. But the Israeli government is insisting that there's no further progress in any kind of peace deal until those people's remains are sent back to Israel, because their families want them back. A lot of them were killed and buried in supposedly places that it's going to be difficult to round up all of the remains of the 28 that are still unaccounted for. But that's what's going on there. Of course, the larger implications of this is this has been going on basically since the establishment of the Israeli state in 1948, after World War II, when 6 million Jews in Europe were rounded up and most of them executed in the most unthinkable ways by the Hitler's German strongholds and their nefarious partners in different pockets of Europe. And at that time, the Israeli settlement for so many displaced people who had their lives torn apart in the late 1930s and 1940s, with the Nazi rise to power and the fierce hatred of Jews by its leader, Adolf Hitler, these people had all of their property stolen, had their houses seized, a lot of them burned down. They return, the ones that were liberated to camps or had gone into hiding other places, they return to nothing in Germany and Austria and so many European countries. And the settlement down in the Middle East, where traditional Jewish faith had emanated, you know, hundreds of years before, was reestablished. And that was the tinderbox that touched off all of this Middle East unrest that we've experienced for all of our lifetimes, most of us. But the story goes back way before that, because this Islamic Muslim religion was established in the 7th century. Okay, now just marinate that for just a minute and think about it. The 7th century. We are now, of course, into the 21st century. So that was quite a few years ago, 1400 years ago, that this ancient religion, Muhammad, came down from the mountain and began a religion that was based on something that's kind of counter to most of the religions in the world, which celebrate life and celebrate faith. And not to suggest the Muslim faith does not, but the difference in the Islamic approach is that there are many hardcore, really primitive ways and sects of that religion that have survived all of these centuries that still hold the view that anyone who doesn't share their beliefs is an infidel, is someone who doesn't deserve to have life. Because if you don't believe in the Prophet Muhammad and his teachings and their religion, you're wrong, they're right, and you are not even qualified to exist if you don't agree. And it's certainly a worldview and a religious view that's not shared by basically any other faith on earth who believes in live and let live and let people worship freely. And that's what America, of course, is based on. So this kind of primitive wing of the Muslim religion, although there were all kinds of different Islamic faiths that kind of branched out as time went on and the evolution of that religion took place, but there have been just terrible conflict in the Middle East for all of this time. And again, if you do the math, that's like 14 centuries of warfare and conflict and battle as people have fought basically over religion. And you've also seen, of course, in the Middle Ages, of centuries advanced to that, as expansion into Europe took place and the Christian faith grew in great prominence. You had the holy wars for many years between Christian missionaries and armies that tried to go in and enforce their beliefs on these very hardcore people. So you've had this religious conflict for literally for centuries. And when Israel was formed in 1948 by largely the British, who were kind of spearheading the reformation, and reparation of Europe, and the American government, of course, very involved in the Allied powers that decided everything after World War II. So the Israeli establishment on the traditional land, which has been occupied by just about every major culture throughout history, really kind of set the fuse of great unrest in the Middle East. And the war has been on now for almost 80 years of Israel fighting for their survival and becoming probably the most sophisticated country in the world in terms of intelligence and military operations. And it was for sheer survival, trying to keep their people alive and their faith alive and their way of life. Israel has become the most formidable foe for all of these Middle Eastern interests that have been working tirelessly for almost a century to try to get rid of them. So the bottom line is that it all kind of blew up on October 7th, 2023. And now with Donald Trump stepping to the forefront and happy to share my birthday spotlight with the President of the United States, because for hereafter, October 13th is going to be a very significant date. Besides being the birth date of Kip Kiefer, October 13th is going to become a day that's remembered for a major step in world peace and harmony and the achievement of what many considered the unachievable, because Donald Trump has done something that no American president since the end of World War II has been able to even take one step close to accomplishing. Donald Trump has pulled it off in the first. Of course, he had the Abraham Accords in his first term between 2016 and 2020, only to be ripped to shreds by the pseudo presidential administration referred to as the Biden years. We all know this real story there, that Joe Biden, a paper tiger with completely ineffective foreign emissaries and diplomats and Secretary of State. They did nothing but exacerbate the problems around the world, did nothing to further them. And on this day, on my birthday, when we're talking about Donald Trump, also Columbus Day, by the way, Columbus Day has been reestablished as a official day of observance because Christopher Columbus and his bold voyages to the New World kind of opened the door for exploration and others to follow that led to the establishment of our great country and everything it stands for. And we talk about that endlessly here on Need to Know. But today, on Columbus Day, on Kip Kiefer's birthday, and on Donald Trump's day of triumph, he addressed the Knesset this morning, the Israeli parliament, which is the equivalent, of course, to our Congress, and received no less than 14 standing ovations in the course of his appearance there. Because what he has done is so extraordinary, and you got to give a lot of credit to the people he surrounded himself with, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, his lead negotiator, Steve Wilkott, who have worked tirelessly on this thing, bringing all these people together to the table. And I'll tell you the key that made it all work in just a moment. And Marco Rubio, I mean, a guy who ran against Trump for president in 2016, the senator from Florida, who took on the role of Secretary of State. Marco Rubio has become one of the most effective diplomats in the history of the United States. He is tireless. He has been unbelievably effective and successful. And that's just kind of a dream team of what's possible when you have the right people pulling the strings. And the president himself, this is such an accomplishment because people don't realize this guy is just a month or two away from being 80 years old, and he has worked night and day tirelessly, working the phones, talking to people halfway across the world at 4 o'clock in the morning or, you know, midnight, because the time difference is so vast. But this has required one of the greatest public relations and you know, complete dedicated efforts to get common ground established for so many of these peoples. And one of the reasons I'm really proud to share this day with my birthday is because back in 2016, actually it was in 2015, late 2015, when Donald Trump and Melania came down the golden escalator at Trump Towers, stepped to a podium and announced he was going to run for president. My first reaction that day, I wasn't a Trump fan at that point, but I had some knowledge of Trump, had actually worked indirectly with him for my boss, Phil Ruffin, who was the major real estate developer and owner, also was involved in Las Vegas with the Frontier Hotel. He now owns Treasure Island there. He ended up selling the Frontier property, which was historic, once owned by Howard Hughes. We were working out of there, and I met Donald Trump for the first time in about 2004, I guess it was. Bottom line is that Trump ended up buying that property. They brought the Frontier down and now have a fabulous Trump hotel right there on the Las Vegas Strip. It's unique because it doesn't have a casino, but it is a very high-end hotel that a lot of people like to stay at. And it's really centrally located on the Las Vegas Strip, where I was privileged enough to be last week, staying across the street from there at the Venetian for the big global gaming expo. It was great. But anyway, Trump worked tirelessly on this thing, which other people had tried or taken some steps forward, but the interest and the hatred were so profound in that part of the world, not only for the Israelis by most of the Arab nations, but by the Arabs' hatred for each other. There was still continuing conflict always. Iran and Iraq used to have wars just for 20, 25 year wars that were never resolved, where Tens of thousands, maybe even millions were killed. Always conflicts between Egypt and Saudi Arabia and all kinds of other countries who, once again, all are Islamic, but all have different interpretations of that faith. But what Donald Trump brilliantly has achieved here was in his first term, when he came in after the Obama administration had basically made relations with the rest of the Arab world ice cold once again. Trump came in and said, you know what? There's new leadership coming here. All these old lions that have ruled these major countries, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt. There were so many countries that were going through leadership transitions, and many were pivoting toward younger guys to be in charge of their countries. Trump made a triumphant trip to the Middle East in his first term and attended, I think, five or six different countries in about a week's period, sat down like with the Saudi Arabian crown prince who was getting ready to take the throne of Saudi Arabia. What a key strategic partner that is. And remember, it was mostly Saudis that brought down the buildings in New York in the infamous attacks on 9/11. The Saudi always had a kind of a radical wing to their country and have been bad actors. But the new crown prince and so many of the other leaders in the Middle East, the younger guys realize that, you know, this is ridiculous. We are in these endless wars. It costs us so much. We are making no progress. And Trump was smart enough to seize upon that and say, look, wouldn't it be great if we could all just get on the same page and promote peace and prosperity? That was the key, the economic success of the region. And of course, they're already swimming in oil money, but there's so much more potential. And if you look at these countries like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, they've got these huge sections of Western culture. I know in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, there's a whole deal of American restaurants and retail outlets, and it goes for miles and miles. It's almost like a New York City or Las Vegas strip. All of it comes from Donald Trump's intervention in his first term. And when he came back, despite how the Biden administration had totally screwed things up in the Middle East, the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, the handing over of billions of dollars of equipment to a terrorist organization there, when we just abandoned that country, we lost 13 soldiers in the airport attack right before the bailout. The Biden administration completely screwed that up. Trump turned the page. We're starting over. He sent Wilcott, his emissary, Jared Kushner. They have worked behind the scenes tirelessly to shore up these relationships. Trump went to the Middle East a couple of months ago and had this great tour, came back with pledges from all of these countries for massive investments in our country that are really going to pay off. Trillions of dollars raised, back in business with the Middle East. And these young guys are saying, enough war. This is crazy. In the first Trump administration, Saudi Arabia and Israel were this close to establishing normal relations. And then the Biden administration came in and it all fell apart. So bottom line, what Donald Trump has done is absolutely remarkable, that all of these Arab countries have gotten together and put pressure on these Hamas guys. You see these campus protests, you know, free Palestine and all that nonsense. The Palestinians backed a terrorist organization to run their country since the late 70s. So for the last 50 years, basically, a terrorist group has been in charge of what's called the government there. It's no government. They have used and abused the Palestinian people as human shields. They have starved them. They have made them live in squalor and poverty. And now a brand new day exists. And the reason it exists is because Trump built such a coalition of other Arab countries who had always been counter to the American proposals. Well, all these young leaders in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and Qatar, all of these guys are on the Trump team. They put unbelievable pressure on their fellow Muslims, these Hamas terrorists, to stand down, release these hostages, no longer be involved in that government, because what they were doing was keeping the Middle East in the same terrible position that it's been in for so many years. Trump, with his Arab partners, finally got these people to back off, get ahead, the hell out of the way. What's going to become of them? The terrorist group, who cares? They're terrorists. They don't deserve to be involved in any of this. He's gotten all of Europe and most of the rest of the world involved, putting pressure on them economically and diplomatically to get the hell out of the way. And let's let the whole world invest in Gaza and the Palestinian people and build a society that can flourish. Prosperity triumphs in a thinking person's mind over hatred. And that's what he has brought to the Middle East. And that's why he's in Egypt right now being celebrated, signing this brand new peace accord. It is an incredible day of accomplishment for Donald Trump and all of the world, Americans included, because now, instead of being adversaries, the Middle East and so many of their major financial centers and leaders are our partners in moving forward. And what a great birthday present for me to have October 13th to be the day that's going to be remembered as the turning point for so much that's been wrong with the world for so long. That's what you needed to know today. Celebrate your country and its great triumph. Even the biggest critics and the lunatics that are saying that this administration is going to be the end of us are very silent today, because Donald Trump has and his team has achieved the impossible. And one final thought, I way back in 2015 said this is exactly the direction we need to go. Donald Trump needs to be president, not because he's a great humanitarian or anything other than a fantastically successful businessman, but because that's exactly what we needed to be in the White House at that point in time. Enough of these professional politicians who are not in government for the promotion of your interests or mine. We are the stockholders in this whole deal. We put in the money that make it run, and they waste the money and misappropriate the money and give the money to people that do not work for our best interests. Donald Trump, a businessman, and I can't tell you how many people are you crazy? He has no political experience. They're telling me I was nuts for supporting Donald Trump. I said, we need a businessman in the White House. Well, politics isn't business. God bless America. I agreed completely with that, and that's exactly what we needed, because our government is the biggest business ever founded in terms of the amounts of trillions of dollars that pour in. A businessman who looked at it from a business standpoint was much more important to have in than another politician who was looking out for their own legacy and their own agenda. Donald Trump is the art of the deal. He's the man who can make the deals. He's made deals all over the world in these two terms. And now the road is paved for a successful, prosperous future for not only all of us Americans, but for people that have lived in the worst circumstances imaginable all over the world. Let's get to business, everybody. Let's be celebratory. We're the stockholders. It's a brand new day in America, and it's a blessed day on October 13th of 2025. That's what you needed to know. I'm Kip Kiefer. We'll be back next week right here on TKR. Thanks for listening.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.